Just over 6 weeks until the general election, and talk of PACs is still dominating the campaign here. The Irish News front page headline today says PAC talks between Remain parties are going to intensify. In an article for today's Belfast Telegraph, the DUP leader Arlene Foster says only her party can win the South Belfast seat for unionism. The Ulster Unionist Party, meanwhile, has said it will not be running candidates in North Belfast, West Belfast and Foyle. So, are PACs inevitable, and are they good or bad for politics here? Do they restrict choice, or are they just reflecting the political realities? Stephen Agnew, the leader of the Green Party, is with us this morning. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Stephen Farry from the Alliance Party. Morning to you, Stephen.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Stephen, this election is first and foremost about Brexit, certainly across the UK, Stephen Farry. Why is Alliance saying no to a pact in Remain parties?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's a whole range of reasons why PACs are a bad idea, but very specifically then on your question on why Brexit, in the context of Brexit, why a pact is a bad idea. Well, Brexit in Northern Ireland is something that affects the entire community. It affects unionists, it affects nationalists, it affects people in the centre ground, progressive people. If we give the impression that Brexit is an issue for nationalists, and that Brexit becomes a veneer for what is essentially a pact amongst nationalist parties, it'll be a major mistake, and it'll marginalise Brexit to being an anti-unionist issue, when it's something where all parties across the spectrum should be uniting and working collectively to get the best possible deal for Northern Ireland.
Well, it wouldn't be a nationalist pact, would it, if you were involved?
Well, what we would be doing, Stephen, if we were part of this, we would be giving respectability to what, in essence, is a nationalist reaction to a unionist pact. Back in March, people voted for our party, over 70,000 people. Indeed, people voted for Stephen Agnew's party. People are trying to break through and create a new type of politics in Northern Ireland, away from the orange versus green, the tribal politics, the sectarian headcounts. If we were going to a situation where we're endorsing PACs, which are essentially about unionism versus nationalism, who's at the bigger camp? Who's in the driving seat for a border poll or opposing a border poll? We'll be setting our politics back many, many years, and that's not something I want to contemplate doing.
Stephen Agnew, you were for remaining in the EU too, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
are you up for a pact?
Well, it's something we're discussing. The Green Party hasn't taken the approach of Alliance, which is to reject it out of hand. We've discussed as a party. We've at this point met with the SDLP and will be seeking to meet other pro-Remain parties this week. But I think people are looking for cooperation, and Brexit is the biggest political decision to affect Northern Ireland since the Good Friday Agreement. And I think it's right and responsible that we explore opportunities for cooperation in terms of, in my view, promoting the need for a referendum on the final deal, and of ensuring that Northern Ireland's voice is heard, especially given that 56% of the people of Northern Ireland voted to remain, yet time and time again the Prime Minister seems to be ignoring our voice and ignoring that mandate.
In principle, are you up for a pact?
Well, we met at the weekend as a party, and what we decided, what the party has decided, is that it is worth continuing the conversation to have meetings with other parties. A bit, I suppose.
Yeah, but like, you're the leader.
Well, the leader doesn't mean just making a call on behalf of a party of hundreds of people. Leadership is about consulting and listening as well as making decisions.
I'm not showing leadership then.
But what?
What's your opinion, though? Are you up for a pact?
Well, I think a bit like the Brexit decision itself, we've agreed in principle to explore this, but ultimately we need to see what the final deal is. So we need to meet with other parties to see what their proposals are, to see what their involvement is, because I don't accept that this is, or I wouldn't accept it if I thought it was some sort of front for a nationalist pact. I will be meeting with unionists, parties who were pro-Remain as well, to see what, if any, way they can be involved and can cooperate with us. So I'm certainly not interested in being a sort of cover for a nationalist pact. But if it is something about genuinely something about challenging Brexit and making Northern Ireland's voice heard, we'll put the people first, and put our party interests aside if something beneficial can take place.
Would Sinn Féin taking their seats be a deal breaker for you, Stephen?
It's certainly something I will be asking. I remain to be convinced that it would make sense.
Have you made your mind up about anything today? So you'll be talking and something you'll be asking.
Stephen, I would...
Be decisive, for goodness sake, man.
I would warn again. The media expect an instant decisions and everything from parties. I think it makes sense that you have discussions with people, and only then can you make an informed choice. It may suit the media that we make, you know, instant decisions, everything's black and white. But I think we do have to see what the proposals from the parties are.
It might suit the voters to know where you stand, Stephen.
Believe me, before we go to the polls on the 8th of June, they'll know exactly where we stand. And I think you've known me long enough to know that I'm fairly straight talking. And before the 8th of June, believe me, I'll give you a clear indication. And I'll
as we currently stand, your party has no position on whether Sinn Féin taking their seats in Westminster would be a precursor to you agreeing to a pact.
That's a minute what I would say. I would remain to be convinced that a Green Party candidate stepping aside for a Sinn Féin candidate who won't take their seat can be good in terms of challenging Brexit and in terms of putting the people first. But we'll have that conversation. I will meet with Sinn Féin. I will hear what their proposals are in relation to this. It was Declan Kearney who was the first to talk about some sort of anti-Brexit arrangement, and it's developed a bit since then. But I haven't met with him to hear their proposals, so I'm not going to make a judgment until I've done that.
Stephen Farrey, is the second referendum your big demand?
Yes, it's one of the issues that we want to see in terms of Brexit. I mean, first of all, we're opposed to a hard Brexit UK-wide, and we also think that there should be a popular vote based upon whatever outcome emerges from the negotiations. And in terms of Northern Ireland, we do want to see a special deal being negotiated. But that's the critical point, Stephen. If we are to get a special deal for Northern Ireland, we have to unite the community. And I come back to the point I made at the start. There is a suspicion that Sinn Féin are not interested in getting a proper special deal for Northern Ireland. They're more concerned about using the prospect of a hard Brexit to undermine the concept of Northern Ireland and to mobilise for a potential United Ireland down the line. And the real danger...
That's a big accusation you're making against Sinn Féin.
Well, it is. Indeed, people will have their perceptions. But in terms of the current talks process, there's a major question mark in terms of how committed Sinn Féin actually are to getting a proper outcome. Because the issues on the table, on the surface, are actually very, very minor. But over the past number of months, we haven't been able to get any real progress in that regard. So there's a major, major question mark there. And there is a perception that Sinn Féin are using the prospect of Brexit to destabilise Northern Ireland and to pursue their wider agenda.
Your perception.
Well, and I think it's shared by others as well, Stephen. But it's a perception.
They keep saying they want the institutions back, don't they?
Well, they say, but then let's show it and let's prove it and let's get the deal done over the coming days before the election campaign starts properly. But there's a real danger in this pact, in that if Sinn Féin come back with an increased mandate, they'll be using that result to campaign for a border poll. Now, I'm perfectly open to people campaigning for a United Ireland, if that's their aspiration. People in our party who would have that particular aspiration. But if we conflate the pursuit of United Ireland with opposing Brexit and trying to get the best deal for Northern Ireland, there's a very, very real danger that we lose support from unionists who are affected just as much as nationalists by the onset of Brexit. And also this notion that we're holding out for Sinn Féin having some commitment to taking their seats. There's zero chance of Sinn Féin ending their abstentions policy in terms of this forthcoming
election. Let's see what you think at home. Jim in East Belfast, first call of the morning. Morning, Jim.
Good morning, Stephen. It's good to hear you again. Talking about PACs in East Belfast, there's been an anti-unions PAC in East Belfast for the last two elections, all going to the Lions Party. If you look at the results, which will state the facts, the SDLP got 127 votes. That's all. Sinn Féin got 908 votes. Where did the votes go? The Lions Party. There's been a PAC there all the time, but it's never talked about.
What do you mean?
Well, exactly. Just look at the results. They're all voting for Naomi Long. It's a nationalist, anti-unionist pact right across the board. Take, for example, there are three very large parishes, Roman Catholic parishes in East Belfast, who I'm sure don't vote for the DUP, the majority of them, some might, on moral issues. But you look at the amount of votes coming out of there. And we have the SDLP here in South East Belfast advising Eastern Europeans who live in these streets to vote anti-unionist, to vote a Lands Party. You know, it's there's a pact there. There has been a pact there for the last two generations.
Sure
that, so
Stephen,
let's state the facts.
Stephen Fry, you're one to respond to this.
Well, indeed. I mean, first of all, I mean, it's a tribute to Naomi's long success that she's been able to garner so many votes. But these parties have stood in East Belfast. But voters will actually think things through for themselves. That's actually the best way forward in terms of trying to address these issues. You need consistency. Voters will look back at previous election results, look at the current candidates, and come to their own conclusions as to what is the best way of casting their vote. The loyalty of people will vote for parties regardless. But Jim, the key point here is Alliance is a cross-community party. People will vote for us from a whole range of backgrounds, whether they're Protestant, Catholic, or something else. And that's what we're trying to achieve. You have to get away from the notion that just because someone's a Catholic, you have to automatically assume that their political aspirations are national.
No, Stephen, I'm not assuming that. Let me emphasise that. And I did say that some Catholics vote for the DUP in moral issues. I did say that. And other parties. But it's a fact that you look at Murray Muldoon, the guy I've never heard of, the woman got 127 votes.
Well, Jim, can I assure you that in East Belfast...
That's one constituency you're talking about, for goodness sake, isn't it?
Let me be very clear, Stephen.
It's a massive constituency.
Let me bring in Peter in West Belfast. Morning, Peter.
Hello, Stephen. Stephen, I was just wondering, have the Ulster Unionist Party, given that they're doing a pact with the Democratic Unionist Party, have they changed their position on Brexit? I genuinely don't know. I know they were pro-European Union before the referendum, but now they seem willing to do an electoral pact with the DUP who were pro-Brexit. So I'm just wondering, have they actually changed their position, and how are they happy enough to do an electoral pact with somebody who has a polar opposite position from them?
Well, we asked the Ulster Unionist Party to come on today. They won't do so. But it looks like, Stephen Farry, they've changed their position, doesn't it?
Well, I think what their position is that they've accepted that Brexit is happening and they're just going along with the flow and backing whatever Theresa May says in Westminster. So
that's what you're doing too, isn't it?
No, I mean, we want to see a special deal for Northern Ireland, and we want to oppose a hard Brexit, and we want to see a second referendum. Those are all issues where we're very different. I just wanted to just address, Stephen, again, the point about what's gone on in East Belfast. There's been zero discussions between us and any other small party in East Belfast, either in this election or in any previous elections. We stand on our own two feet. Other parties stand on their own two feet. The issue here is we've been successful in terms of framing the choice in East Belfast between us and the DUP. That's what's happened.
Okay, Lawrence is in Sinfield. Hello, Lawrence.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning.
Stephen, they're yelling about getting a good deal from Brexit. Whenever we went into the European economy at the start of the European market, we had the largest ropeworks in the world. We had the best shipyard in the world. We had loads of manufacturing. Every small town had factories of some sort. There was carpet manufacturing, there was tanneries, there was the tool factories and Hughes's and Mackey's. You had all the shirt manufacturers, Taiyang Toys, all them. Where are they? They're all gone. Harry Ferguson set up the Ferguson tractor factory.
What's this got to do with Europe?
What's it got to do with Brexit?
Yes.
Well, if they had stayed out of Europe, we would still have had them, because Europe gave Acro, who now own Massey Ferguson, a big grant to build a new factory in France and close down Coventry.
So you're looking forward to Brexit then? You're looking forward to Brexit?
I'm looking forward to it, because whenever we joined it, I'm old enough to know whenever we joined it, we had factories here, you could have went and got jobs and all the rest of it, no problem, loads of factories. There's nothing now, unless you want to work in a shop or work for a pub or hotel or work in government. There is no other jobs. And that's, our politicians are sitting yelling about a Brexit deal. If they had stopped Europe taking our employment, our manufacturing away, we would have still been all right. But we have no manufacturing thanks to the politicians.
The commentators, Alex Kane and Alison Morris, with us this morning. Alison, morning to you.
Good morning.
Morning, Alex. Morning.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Alison.
So what's going on here then? How can the Ulster Unionist Party, for example, how can they not look daft going into a pact with the party that they were slagging off until a few weeks ago?
That to me, Stephen?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. That's going to be one of the problems with the pact. Look, this boils down to the original pact in 2015 was to get the DUP seat back in East Belfast. It was also to give the LCU a chance of winning a couple of seats because they haven't won any since 2005. But you're right, as soon as that pact was over, as soon as they did that, they were back to the usual old ding-donging, shouting with each other, disagreeing with each other, Nesbitt walking out of the executive at one point, then the opposition. And you're right, Stephen, for a lot of people, and we're talking particularly about the new voters they want to attract. It's not people who solidly vote DUP or solidly vote UUP. It's trying to attract those thousands of people who, for one reason or another, haven't voted for either party. But I can't see how those people just don't look at this and go, that's very confusing. They disagree on same-sex marriage. They disagree on Brexit. They disagree on whether or not they should be in government together. How you sell that, and it's impossible against that background to present it as anything other. And we can see it from Sammy Wilson today. I think he's talking about an anti-unionist front being set up, and that includes Alliance and the Greens.
It was the Ulster Unionist Party at Christmas who was asking Arlene Foster to step out of her job, for goodness sake.
That's what I'm saying, Stephen. It does and sounds particularly absurd. But we've seen this from the mid-1970s when unionists think that they are under some sort of actual or perceived threat. They construct, in some cases, absurd, and I mean truly absurd, alliances and pacts, and with every single one of them. Now, let's go back even to the Ulster Unionist one with the Conservative, the UKANF pact, the United Unionist Forum in 2013. Every single one of these pacts breaks down, Stephen. No progress has been made, no lessons have been learned, and the relationships between the unionist parties are just as bad as ever they were.
Is there much difference in policy between the DUP and the UUP?
In some senses, no, because it's partly to do with the very nature of government and the mandatory coalition and how they work the programme for government in terms of, you know, if the executive was up and running. But there is a difference. There's a difference, if you like, in outlook. There's a difference on many key socio-moral issues. There is a wing of the Ulster Unionist Party which would be much easier on things like same-sex marriage, secularism, licensing laws and things like that, set against a fundamentalist wing of the DUP. But the problem, Stephen, is we know from PACT, it's one thing we know for sure. There's a hardcore section of the Ulster Unionist Party doesn't vote DUP and isn't going to vote, and there's a hardcore section of the DUP won't vote Ulster Unionist Party and never has voted. And if those two get sucked in somewhere and you don't bring in other unionist voters, then in the long term, PACTs, apart from once in the blue moon, they don't really work all that well.
Alison Morris, is there a risk for the SDLP if they get into bed with Sinn Féin?
I think there's a massive risk for any of the parties forming what has been called a sort of anti-Brexit alliance. But in reality, as we know, both Sinn Féin and the SDLP have seen the Brexit situation as an opportunity to maybe further the cause of United Ireland, or Sinn Féin have specifically been using it to call for a border poll. In that sense, you can see why Alliance won't join, have refused to join into any sort of pact in relation to that, because it would, for optics sake, it would appear like a nationalist pact, and they're obviously not going to want to involve themselves in that. But the SDLP are in a very difficult position here. They do need the help of Sinn Féin in certain constituencies if they're to even have a fighting chance, such as in South Belfast. But at the same time, too, when they went into the opposition, I think it was much better for them to be in opposition against Sinn Féin because it gives them a point of difference. And what we can see now with the Ulster Unionists and the DUP is no point of difference, which I think is probably going to be fatal to the future of the Ulster Unionist Party. The parties in opposition were able to show that there was difference. They were able to show the voters that there was difference. When they start entering into PACT, then it removes that. You know, it blurs the lines then between the two.
Let me ask all four of you. Stephen Fry, we'll start with you, about recent comments from the DUP's Jim Wells, who has said that he will walk from the party, he will leave the DUP if his party doesn't use a petition of concern to veto gay marriage in Northern Ireland. It's a big claim. It was reported in the Belfast Telegraph. Peter will not marry Paul in Northern Ireland, he's quoted as saying, and asked whether the party would lift its veto in the Assembly. Jim Wells said, don't even think that. That's an absolute no. Some of us would walk before that would happen. We feel very, very strongly about it. So he's threatening to walk, Stephen Farry.
Well, it shows the tensions that are existing in some parties around these issues. In terms of equal marriage, I mean, this has been an outstanding issue now for many years, and Northern Ireland is badly out of step. with many other countries, particularly in these islands. I mean, even in the UK context, we see the Falkland Islands have now gone down in support of equal marriage. So we're very, very much an outlier, and I understand the frustrations that have built up in terms of this not being put in place.
But it begs the question, what chances are there of a deal? We know Sinn Féin are saying that equality, gay marriage is one of the big issues for them to get resolved in the talks. And here you have a prominent member of the DUP saying that the party will split if there is any give on it, and that he will personally leave the party.
Yeah, and what the DUP are being asked to do is not to put their hands up for equal marriage, if that's what they are determined not to do. Just allow everyone else to get on and to see it happen and to put it through. Whatever the petition of concern was envisaged back in the Good Friday Agreement, it was never envisaged that it would be applied to issues, social issues such as equal marriage. It's there to protect the fundamental difference between unionism and nationalism in terms of the historic context of Northern Ireland. So this is an abusive position of concern that he's actually trying to defend.
Alex Kane,
really
would the DUP implode given its history and its background if there was a decision within the leadership to lift the veto?
I think it could cause them problems, because we know, and Jim would be one of them, and there are two or three others who I think feel so strongly in this. But oddly enough, Stephen, I sent a message. So Jim and I were at university together, so I've known him for a very long time. I sent him a message on Saturday afternoon after I'd read the Belfast Telegraph story and said, forget it, let's forget about the petition of concern thing at the moment. Would you, because they don't have it at the minute anyway, they couldn't put it in together. What would you do, Jim, if the leadership said, look, we are making this a freedom of conscience issue, we're leaving it to every individual DUP MLA to decide and vote how their conscience dictates? In other words, the petition of concern wouldn't be run into it at all. It would be up. And you should say, Jim, that means you're respecting your own colleagues, those who have differences with you. You're not forcing people to do what they don't want. Even if you were left of that, you would never have to vote for it. You wouldn't be stopping it or not stopping it. You would make your decision based entirely on your conscience, as would every other one of your colleagues. He hasn't got back. And that interests me simply because if that was the case, it's much more difficult now, the fact they have only 28 MLAs. But I'm just wondering if Jim or some of those other people he's talking about, even if Arlene was to say, look, we're going to do what the Ulster Unionist Party do, what other parties do, this is a freedom of conscience issue as far as we are concerned.
I wonder, did he speak with her permission?
I suspect not. Well, the fact that he said it in such blunt terms that he would leave, that, and not just himself, I think people do that all the time.
Does that tell you something? Is there not a message in that in itself? If he didn't have permission from the party, I don't know if he did or he didn't, by the way.
But
the fact that so close to an election now, he's deciding part of the news agenda for the party that day.
Yes, well, we don't know for definite whether he's flagging it up with the permission of the leadership. But what it does suggest is that there are people in the DUP have now got it into their heads that the petition of concern or freedom of conscience may now be on the agenda, and they are letting it. They are making it quite clear that, as far as they're concerned personally, it's a non-runner. But as I say, it may have been done with the leadership's permission. Parties do this; they fly a kite just to see how far it goes. So, well, at this stage, we do. But it's interesting, Stephen, that I just thought maybe he hasn't had time. If he's listening, Jim, the message is still there. But just, I think that's in some senses a more interesting question, because I know there are members of the DUP, I've known them for years, who would not be considered as hardline on that issue, and who might, if given the freedom of a conscience vote, been told, look, it's up to you to say you'll be answerable to your own election.
And of course, as you say, they can't trigger a petition of concern on their own, Alison Morris. They would need someone from the Ulster Unionist Party, wouldn't they? And that would be an interesting question for the UUP.
It would, because I know that they have an issue of conscience on all sorts of social issues, such as same-sex marriage. But I mean, I think that Jim Wales' comments last week, while he's entitled to hold them, he needs to realise that he is not entitled to hold back progress. And when you look at what happened in the South with the referendum, and you look at a country that was once, you know, wedded to church and state, you couldn't have got a slice of paper between a sheet of paper between the two of them. And you've seen the massive changes there. And the sky didn't fall in, the world didn't change. And I think that Arlene Foster knows that. And she knows that the world has moved on and that her party needs to move on with it. And I think it would be a very smart decision on her behalf to change the party with Tula to be a matter of conscience. And first of all, then,
Wells says there would be a split in the party, Alison.
I don't actually, I don't believe there would. I think there are probably people like him, and maybe I can possibly think of another two who would maybe walk away. But I think the rest of the party are progressive enough to know that socially people's attitudes have changed, and it is no longer possible to keep on using the church and using your own religion as a barrier to change and a barrier to change inequality. And I think it would be, for an Arlene Foster's point of view, it'd be quite refreshing for her to take that out of her hands and take it out of the party's hands and allow people just to make their own decision on it. And they don't have a majority in Stormont anymore, so they don't have the ability to block it on their own. And I think that should we ever get the Assembly up and running, there'd be another vote. If the petition of concern wasn't used, it would quite easily pass in favour of gay marriage.
Stephen, like you?
I think it is time we moved on in this issue. I think not only the vote in the Republic of Ireland, but the recent decision of the Citizens' Assembly to approve abortion reform shows that people have moved on in these moral issues. I suspect in the case of Jim Wells that ever since he was stepped down as health minister that there's probably been tensions with the relationship between him and his party, and I think this is another outworking of that. You know, if he's almost threatening the party publicly, I think there's a breakdown of the relationship, and it sounds like somebody to me who's losing the battle. Petition of concern does need to be reformed, if not fully done away with, and that has been part of the negotiations as part of the talks, and I think that this is a last stab from Jim Wells to keep that power, to keep that block against marriage equality and progress and all their moral issues.
Stephen Agnew, Stephen Farry, thank you very much. Alison and Alex, thank you.